Good evening. Welcome to tonight's conference call. This time of year, Mr. Y usually visits our offices to ask Steve what his thoughts are about the global securities market and about his thinking about the new year prospects. Unfortunately, Mr. Y couldn't make it this year as he's preparing for a tough economic climate in China. Mr. Y is familiar with Steve's involvement with the University of Oxford and his global meeting with colleagues in the United Kingdom. So, Mr. Y asked his friend Doc Martin to fill in for him and interview Steve. We hope you enjoyed tonight's enlightening and informative conference call.
Good evening, Steve. I hear you go to the UK often, mostly to Oxford.
Yes, I do, Doc. I've been there many times. I don't get quite down to Cornwall where you are, but I do go to Oxford. I try to learn something about business, the global economy, stocks and bonds, and I get to meet some of the world's greatest professors and colleagues.
Tell me about your typical day.
Well, I try to wake up early in the morning, have a great English breakfast. I know you probably don't like that. You eat granola and strawberries, but I stay at this hotel about 2 miles out of town, so I get to walk that big, fat breakfast off when I go to the Syed Business School. Or sometimes I stay in the college where I graduated from, which is about a mile walk. In the morning, I meet with colleagues who are all over the world, or I meet with professors who talk about economics and finance. And we talk about politics, global economics, investments, a lot of interesting stuff. We usually don't talk about Adele, though. I usually eat lunch in the school with my mates, and we discuss all sorts of things in the afternoon. And I sit in the classes that are of interest to me, such as global economy, effects of Brexit, impacts of China, and so on. And the best part is, when the class is over, we go over to a great Chinese restaurant for dinner, and then off to the pub.
I hear you are an Oxford graduate.
Yes, I am. I have 3 graduate degrees from Oxford.
Wow, impressive. But did you learn anything? And what do you get out of these visits, besides big airline and food costs?
Well, it depends on you who you ask if I've learned anything. If you went back to my undergraduate days and asked any of the professors if I learned anything, they'd say no. But what Oxford does for me is to keep me linked with the global community, and that gives me a really valuable insight that I just can't get anywhere else. Let me give you a great example. If you really want to invest in China, do you read about it in the financial publications, or do you listen to the brokers who generally don't know too much, or do you listen to experts who are generally wrong? No, you listen to the men and women in the trenches, the ones who live and breathe China every day, or you listen to a guy like Richard Branson. Normally, the Chinese are very reserved, and they don't like to talk too much, but Branson does, especially about sensitive subjects. However, after a couple beers at the pub, the Chinese really open up a lot, and you learn something. This is why we largely have been avoiding China for now. Although the Chinese stock market did fairly well last year, the economics point in the other direction. Take a look at the dichotomies of what's really going in China. Furthermore, because of my casual talks with colleagues in China, I find out how the government manipulates their stock market in order to repair the damage from last year's speculative crash. I also learned from colleagues that the majority of the people in the UK were in favor of leaving the European Union.
Did you take advantage of Brexit?
Boy, did I. In our fund, YYNR, I shorted the British pound through the liberal use of options when the pound was at 132 to the dollar. You know, it's funny because I was driving to San Francisco on the day of the Brexit vote, and I tuned into the news, and it said that the likelihood that Britain was going to leave the UK was 98%. And I called back to the office to see how much I lost in my option position. But by the time I got to Nob Hill for dinner with my friends, the news had said that Britain voted to leave the UK. I couldn't believe it. I was so happy. I couldn't wait till the next morning when I woke up to call Fidelity to see how much we made on that trade.
What else did you learn on your last trip?
Well, I learned several things. That Brexit is only one part of the global dissatisfaction with the ruling elite. Britain was first, but the U.S. was second with the election of Donald Trump And now Italy is third with their recent election. Further elections across Europe will spell problems for globalization and the ruling elite. That's why we have to change our investment strategy. The people, like it or not, are tired of politicians not getting things done, and they're getting tired of the same old ruling elite who are corrupt and privileged. And besides, I learned about a couple new beers over at the pub.
Can this be good?
The beers? Yeah, the beers were pretty good. Maybe if you live in Cornwall, they're not so good, but certainly for Oxford, they were good. Bill Clinton's push into globalization fueled a massive expansion in global trade that everybody benefited from. Yes, unfortunately, it did hollow out middle America and British manufacturing jobs, as those jobs went away to lower-wage countries. Many people lost their jobs, and that is really unfortunate, but many of them got retrained, found better-paying jobs, higher-skilled jobs to replace them. There's always pros and cons to globalization, but the bottom line, it has been beneficial.
What about China? Are they playing fair?
Well, I just want to go back to globalization for a minute. Can you imagine if Britain was the sole manufacturer of cars like they did in the 70s? I remember my 1979 MGB. It standard more garbage from Britain. So really, globalization has improved the manufacturing quality worldwide. But now we're going to go talk about China. Are they playing fair? No, they're not. That's a good point. China is not playing fair, and we need to do something about it. China has implemented these non-market trade barriers, like restricting the number of American films that we can export to China to 34, or requiring foreign companies to share their sensitive technology with them. This has got to stop. I'm a big believer in fair trade, and the only way the global trading can operate properly is if there's give and take on both sides.
Even in Cornwall, we have noticed an upturn in inflation. How does that play into global trade?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned inflation, because inflation and bond yields have passed a cyclical turning point. But this doesn't mean we're going to experience a large inflation. Not yet. I believe that for the next couple of years, inflation should be pretty tame. However, by the end of the decade, I think that the United States will experience a large stagflation, and that we have to prepare the portfolios for. A sustained uptrend is here, and that is reflected in the recent rise in interest rates.
Are you doing anything about it?
Well, we have. We've made good progress. We have started to reduce the maturity of the bond portfolios. Last year, in 2016, we sold a few longer-dated bonds, and we reduced the average length of maturity. We also bought Treasury inflation-protected securities, and we're increasing the allocation of stocks versus bonds. We still like bonds, and we will use that money to buy some more bonds, but with lower maturities.
I noticed that my bond portfolio had a rocky year.
You English, I'm not sure when you're going to learn how to speak. It is called a rocky year. But the first 6 months of the year were absolutely great for bonds, as interest rates slightly declined after the Brexit fallout. However, after the U.S. election, bond yields went up, and bond prices went down at one of the fastest clips I've ever seen.
What is your interest rate forecast?
Well, remember, I'm not Carnac the Magnificent. You know, the old Johnny Carson character that he played on The Tonight Show? I have some suspicions that the 10-year Treasury will be at least 3% by the end of the year 2017 and 4% by 2019. That means credit card, home lines of credit, and mortgage rates are going up.
What will that do to our bond portfolio?
Well, as I said, in December, I reduced the maturities of the longer-dated bonds, and I have a lot of bonds with shorter-dated maturities, so I think we're going to be fine. The shorter-dated bonds won't get hurt too much.
Why don't you use bond funds?
Well, you know why I don't use bond funds. I've told you this a million times, but I guess I'll tell you another million times. I don't use bond funds for exactly this reason, Doc. If I buy individual bonds, I can hold them to maturity and receive every penny I paid for them, plus interest if the bond doesn't default. By the way, I've never had a bond default on me. If I own bond funds, I'm subject to the fund holders selling their shares. To pay the shareholders, the bond fund holder, the bond manager, has to sell exactly at a time when he shouldn't. The rest are left holding the bag, and I don't want to be one of those guys. Long bond funds are down 12% this year, but we are not. I don't buy bond funds because I simply hold bonds until their maturity and I won't get trampled. And I could ask you why you don't employ Burt Large.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Back to inflation. What is a tip? Is that what I'm supposed to give to Burt Large?
Oh, speaking of Burt Large, well, no, Doc, a tip is a Treasury inflation-protected security. It is a bond that has an interest rate rise with inflation. If interest rates rise too much, they can get hurt like other bonds, but at least you're protected against the ravages of inflation. And do you really want to eat at Burt's restaurant?
Why have bonds at all?
Well, in a rising stock market like the one we've had since November, it seems like not having bonds would be a good idea. After all, stocks rose approximately 4.6% since the election and 4.6% after the election. Bonds dropped 9%. However, people's memories are short, and they forget how important bonds are as a diversification tool. Anyone remember the market crashes in years 2000, 2008, 2009? Bonds skyrocketed in prices as yields plunged and kept the portfolios from having any significant or permanent loss. Bonds provide a useful tool for diversification and protection. Congress right now is assessing the possibility of taxing bond interest at a capital gains rate instead of ordinary income. That is extraordinary. And if that comes to pass, that will be a big boost to bonds. We've also had much more corporate bonds than government ones. The corporate bonds held up much better than government bonds in the last two and a half months.
Why should I diversify, and why shouldn't I have an all-stock portfolio?
Well, Doc, at your age, do you really want an all-stock portfolio? And when you retire, to go work at Wimpy Bar serving hamburgers? I don't think so. Some folks don't diversify, and they do have an all-stock portfolio. For example, our fund, YY&R, is aggressive and a concentrated portfolio with no bonds. However, it's volatile, and can you stomach that? Let's say, for example, you had an all-stock portfolio in 2008. Would you be happy if your portfolio went down 37%?
No, I would be frightened.
That's why we have a portfolio that includes stocks from U.S., foreign countries, big companies, small companies, bonds, sometimes gold. It's the diversification that reduces risk and increases return over the long haul.
It looks like we have had a very good year in spite of bonds. What does the Great Khan see in 2017?
Well, the U.S. dollar has shown amazing strength in 2016, and I expect it to continue rising another 6%. A rising dollar puts pressure on corporate profits as companies export less goods and services to the rest of the world. This could limit corporate profits.
What is your opinion of the stock market in 2017?
Well, after steep climbs in November and early December, both the bond market and the stock market are overdue for a pause. The bond market looks like it's stabilizing and maybe even backtracking a bit as interest rates rise. I expect interest rates rise to continue marching up in 2017. And the stock market has become divorced from reality. Doc, have you ever treated a patient who was as loony as Steve Jobs was?
Yes. Do you remember Mrs. Tischel, the pharmacist?
Yes, I do. She was psychotic.
Just like Steve Jobs, she has a distortion reality field in that she believes what she wants to believe, not necessarily what is the truth.
That is how I feel about the stock market today. It's broken away from the fundamentals because of the election of Donald Trump. However, the domestic economy is on reasonably sound footing. Consumers have been extremely hopeful. There's an entire rise in the stock market due to better expectations about the future. But it's really unclear to me how much of this translates into better consumer spending. Preliminary reports about holiday shopping at retail stores don't show much of an improvement over last year, although there has been a great improvement in online shopping.
How does this affect stocks?
Well, evidence of exuberant overshoot is apparent at the sector level. We are really cautiously optimistic and constructive on stocks. I think that the year 2017 will end up higher than at the end of 2016. So we've increased our stock allocations, even though it will prove to be very volatile as the Trump presidency runs into headwinds.
Earlier, you talked about globalization, the U.S. dollar, China, emerging markets, and Trump. What do all these regime changes mean, and what are the implications for investors?
Well, I just want to go back to headwinds. Hopefully, Donald Trump will be able to get a lot of this stuff passed, and hopefully he won't run into Meryl Streep as a headwind. Anyway, we did talk about globalization, the U.S. dollar, China, emerging markets, and Trump. For one thing, falling inflation and interest rates moves away from fiscal conservatism, negative feelings towards globalization, and a rising U.S. dollar. All this will affect corporate profits. People will still search for yield, but those valuations in bonds and REITs and yield-type stocks don't warrant an increase in holdings. The U.S. stock market is modestly overvalued, but conditions are ripe for an overshoot. There is a good chance of a 10% or so correction in 2017, and that would represent a good buying opportunity. We are keeping a higher than normal cash balance, waiting to buy more stocks and to increase the stock allocation. Valuations are better in Japan and Europe, and those are two markets where we're really fishing. Relative money conditions favor Japan and Europe. And I think oil will range between $50 and $60 this year.
You have referred to black swan events in the past. Do you see any?
Well, you know, a black swan event is an event that is not predictable. It's an unpredictable event by definition. So most economists and investment folks think that the odds of a trade war with China are low. I say the odds are high, leading to a black swan event. That's something I'm watching very closely. President-elect Trump has been pretty active in China bashing, and I expect the Chinese to retaliate when it comes to issues in the South China Sea and Taiwan. And the Chinese are not playing fair with trade. We mentioned that earlier tonight. The Chinese government came up with a $29 million fine against GM for price fixing. GM car sells better in China than the domestic Chinese producers, and the big Chinese powers don't like that. So to sway the public to reduce the purchase of GM cars, they come up with a bogus charge. This has occurred in the past with Qualcomm, Apple, Volvo, and Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't think Trump or the Congress is going to let this stuff happen.
I'm near retirement. I hear you do financial planning. Is that a good thing for me?
Well, we've done financial planning for a long, long time. As I noticed that people were getting older, they weren't adequately preparing for retirement. Many people simply outspend their means, and when it comes to retire, they fall short. Later, we noticed that most people were overinsured or they had no estate plans. And then we had some people say to themselves, I don't want to be serving French fries at Burger King. These questions always come up, and that's when I changed the direction of the firm. Yes, we invest our clients' funds in diversified portfolios using stocks and bonds and sometimes mutual funds or ETFs. We assess your risk and assess your stomach for volatility. We lose the sleep so you don't have to. And we invest your money in a prudent manner in a diversified portfolio that will not always beat the S&P 500 index. Most of the portfolios are balanced with stocks and bonds, so it's ludicrous to have a portfolio of stocks and bonds to be compared to an all-stock portfolio. Besides, that's not the point. The point is in financial planning is to help you get to retirement, to live a comfortable life, to give money to your kids and grandkids. And that all takes long-range planning. We look at a lot of facets in a financial plan, and the financial plans that we have accomplished for our clients, from what the people tell me, has really benefited it. And that is one of the highlights they tell me about their relationship with us.
Now that I'm married to Louisa, I'm finding how expensive things really are. Any last words?
Well, now that I've been married 18 years to Adriana, boy, did I find out how expensive things really are. But, hey, you know, we had a very good year in the stock market, not mainly due to the after effects of the Trump election, because we had a well-designed, balanced portfolio that was doing well before the election. I anticipate a very good 2017, but it's going to be rocky for sure, and I'm expecting a 10% more correction early this year. But I'm willing to ride it out, and you should too. Outside of fixed income only portfolios, I'm reducing the bond allocation. In balanced portfolios, I'm increasing the stock allocation slightly, but not dramatically. But I'd like to part with these words. On behalf of all of us at SFP, I wish you all a happy new year, and I look forward in the very near future to see you when I do my portfolio performance.
Are you coming to Cornwall anytime soon?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be coming to Cornwall in June after my pilgrimage to Oxford. Cornwall isn't thinking of splitting from Britain, is it?
No, I don't think so. That would be like the National Health Service being the first choice of Britons to go when they are sick.
Gosh, well, who wants that choice? I think I will come to Cornwall because probably Scotland will be floating off towards Europe by that time. So, you know what, Doc, if I don't see you in June, I'll be talking to you in March when I go back to Oxford.